There have been a lot of books written on happiness, but not many about joy. Maybe because happy is so shiny, so pretty.
Yes.
The cheerleader on the front row who gets all the attention, while joy is deeper, subtle, more elusive. The Mona Lisa of emotions.
Yes.
Joy comes softly and stays. Happiness rushes in like a wind, fleeting, slamming the door behind her in her wake.
Yes.
Joy is not as sexy as happiness. If happiness is a temperamental thoroughbred, joy is a steadying, plodding oxen making its way unerringly back to the barn. So given the choice, everything, and I mean everything, is a choice, I choose joy.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I am absolutely delighted to be joined today by Kate Buckley. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Matthew.
And Kate, so Kate is an award-winning poet and author. In fact, you were recently appointed the first Poet Laureate of Laguna Beach. You're a professional coach, and you're the founder and principal of Buckley Media Group, which is a branding and premium domains agency. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. You're an expert premium domain consulting and representation, specializing in ultrapremium.coms. And you sold over $1.6 million worth of domains this year, which is pretty astounding. So, Kate, welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Thank you, Matthew. Thanks for having me on the show.
So, we were talking earlier, you've been doing a bit of globetrotting. So, you've just I've been following you on Facebook. You've been doing a whistle-stop tour of Europe. Every day, it's like a different country. So, you know, welcome back to the U.S.
Thank you. I had a fabulous time, but I'm happy to be back in California, it's been fun.
One of the questions that I wanted to ask you about traveling, do you think you have a very different outlook to traveling now that you work for yourself and you're paddling your own canoe, as it were, than you would have had, do you think, if you were flying out on under someone else's umbrella?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, for starters, there's no vacation time. Right? I mean, it really is, you know, hashtag laptop lifestyle. I have all of my gear with me and I work every day, no matter where I am.
But would you want it any other way, though?
No. Also, the other fun thing is everyone I meet is a portal to another world.
Yes.
Right? And I, my first job is to get curious about them.
Yes.
Yeah. And just enjoy that connection. And then, hey, perhaps a connection will present itself. Perhaps they're with a company that I've been trying to reach.
Yes.
Or perhaps they're trying to reach a colleague of mine and I can facilitate that connection and be of service. So I just try to view everyone I meet as a potential new friend and just get curious about what that connection could be. And of course, with traveling, you know, your pool gets a lot more diverse and a lot broader, a lot more interesting.
And that leads me onto pretty much the main theme of what I wanted to talk about today, which is storytelling.
Yeah.
And the importance of storytelling. Now, you wrote a book back in 2009 called Follow Me Down.
Yes.
And as I'm sure you know, because you wrote the book, the book is about memories and how they're passed down from generation to generation. Now, when you wrote that book, it was just about on the cusp of when Facebook was, I think it was still in the brain of a certain Mr. Zuckerman. But do you think that that's changed? Do you think storytelling, how do you think that's changed over the last few years? Zuckerberg, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Cut that out in the edits. how do you think that storytelling has changed over the last few years?
If I recall correctly, 2009 was the year I joined Facebook.
Yes. You were probably number four or something.
I don't think I was quite that early, but I was probably relatively an early adopter. And I joined Twitter that same year. And it's interesting that you say this, because I do think it's changed storytelling both for me personally and on a broader macro global level as well. And even speaking of memories, instead of turning to our journals or our photo albums, which are now an artifact,
yes,
right, we get daily pop-ups. For those of us who are still on Facebook, we get daily pop-ups of your memories, it's a function called On This Day.
Yes.
And it's quite surreal to have, a platform, an application remind you, curate, if you will, your memories for you and serve them up to you in digital array. It's uncanny. And there's parts of it that I think are interesting and valuable. And there's parts that I feel it has impoverished
yes.
us to a great degree. I personally journal less.
Yep.
Than I used to. I create fewer visual records
yes.
than I used to. And I don't think that's a good thing. And in fact, I've been kind of sitting with that and taking myself to task about that lately.
Yep.
And trying to journal more and Facebook less.
it's funny because, and this sort of ties in with what's happening, what you're pretty much masterminding with the sale of .com. So take two of the recent sales that you did, which is rate.com and refi.com.
Uh-huh.
And those are two, I mean, if you combine the two of them together, was it $1.6 million?
Something like that.
For those two URLs.
Rate.com was 725,000 and refi.com was 500,000.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, about 1.3 million. Yeah. But the important thing there is that clearly the companies that bought those websites, those .com addresses, realize that there's got to be that much value in there.
Yeah.
And we're all seeing companies moving into social media.
Mm-hmm.
But is there a disconnect, you think, between their approach, which is taking the old Mad Men style advertising approach, to what social media is? And do you think social media is just about shop windows, or do you think it is more about storytelling and more about vulnerability and showing us your true self?
I think social media has quite a few challenges right now. I think in the beginning it was so promising and to connect us all and to entertain us all, and I think it's fallen short of that goal. And I think it's not really serving brands very well either.
Yeah.
Lack of brand alignment, lack of relevance, lack of consumer interaction, and over reliance on automation, in
yes.
a one size fits all approach. And well, we know that doesn't work.
Yes.
The social media agencies keep kind of preaching that. And moreover, and this gets into my domaining work, I think it's a mistake to adopt the short term metric of clicks, likes, and shares that largely do not move the needle, by the way,
yes.
statistically, instead of viewing social media as part of a larger marketing and communication strategy. The latter is more holistic, strategic, not to mention effective.
Yeah.
And it's a different approach to communicating a brand's authentic DNA as opposed to what's trending.
Yes.
And engaging with consumers in a sustainable fashion that does actually move the needle. And premium domains get into that because they are storytelling. They are telling the story of the brand,
yeah.
which is what Guaranteed Rate saw about rate.com.
Yeah.
It was a short, brandable, memorable way to capture their story and four characters, right? The
yeah.
shorter the domain, the more valuable. Generally,
yes.
freedom.com just sold for 2 million.
Yeah. Well, I know fly.com sold for 2.9 or something. So
2.89. That was just announced about a month or two ago. Travelzoo, that was Travelzoo's sale. They bought fly.com in 2009 for 1.8.
Yes.
So not only were they able to use it to tell their story in a memorable fashion, I mean, it definitely passes the cocktail party test, fly.com. right?
Yeah.
But it's in perfect alignment. They're a travel company. Plus, there's all those brand story feel goods of fly away,
yep.
right? So they got that fabulous use out of it in alignment with their mission. And then when they were ready to pivot and go to a different direction, premiumglobal.com's are appreciating assets. And they made, you know, $1.8 million on the deal, $1.84 million, not too shabby.
No. I mean, and that's astonishing because that's a business that really has been created out of nothing.
Oh, yeah.
So, but how did you find yourself right in the middle of some of the biggest deals this country has seen in that space?
Heck if I know.
That's right. You know, that's not an uncommon answer.
I mean, I really would be lying if I sat back and told you, oh, I've masterminded this whole thing. You know, this is, I think that if you are committed to showing up every day and doing some good work every day incrementally, you get some good wins if you're lucky. You know, I was fortunate enough to be mentored by some pretty big guys in that space, in the domain space. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Costello brothers. Are you familiar with them? They're domain hall of famers.
Only through reading up about you, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a good place to start.
No, I'm not thinking about Abbott Costello.
Yeah, it's not the Irish Costello. It's the Italian Castello. But the Costello brothers, David and Michael, are quite well known in the domaining space. Domainer Hall of Famers. Michael's on the board of ICANN, et cetera, et cetera. So I first met David Costello in 1998.
Wow,
so okay. Now I'm dating myself. And I was amazed at the business he was in. It was so exciting to me. I grasped its endless possibilities and I wanted to be a part of it. And I think part of that is my entrepreneurial background. You know, I'm from a family of entrepreneurs. Like many entrepreneurs, I tend to be rather stubborn. Shall we say tenacious?
Yeah, no, it's a great quality. Yeah.
Determined and, you know, and wanted the opportunity to do something to the best of my abilities instead of fitting in a slot in someone else's machine, right?
One of the words that you used just now, which is very interesting, is incremental.
Yeah.
And I think I was reading a book the other day called How Google Works.
Yeah.
And you know, Google... it's all about 10X and moonshots. And but I think one of the missives that went around Google a few years ago was, look, you know, we don't all have to go for the moon, just incremental steps is, and I think one of the issues or pain points that an entrepreneur has is the ability or the demand for instant gratification.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't understand why my business isn't an instant success.
Yeah, exactly. I think about that quite a lot. And in fact, I think the term that they used was roof shot, right?
Correct, exactly.
So you know, it doesn't all have to be a moonshot. You need those roof shots along the way to get those incremental gains. And that's something that I have used in the past in my coaching practice, working with executives and, you know, helping them say, okay, well, here you are. Where do you want it to be when you grow up, so to speak?
Yeah.
And let's chart that path, right? And then let's break that path down to incremental achievable steps. And sometimes the metaphor I use is, okay, say someone wanted to lose 20 pounds. Would they wake up the next morning after eating salad all day and say, I am quitting because I've only lost half a pound or nothing, right? Exactly. No, I mean, one would hope they wouldn't. You know, one would hope that they would chart out measurable, achievable steps and celebrate each goal along the way.
Yes.
And I even do that in my own business. Of course, I was actually speaking to one of my co-brokers yesterday, and she was a little frustrated. She's newer to the business. She's quite good, and I think that she did very well. But she is newer to the business. And she was getting really frustrated that she hadn't had a big win yet, you know, a big six-figure sale. And so we talked about going through the portfolio and identifying some roof shots for her.
Yes.
Some domains that aren't six-figure, but that I thought she could have a pretty good chance of turning pretty quickly and getting that feel-good roof shot win.
Yes.
And that tactic felt very good to her. And so that's our pivot, you know, on that. So I'm a big believer in that.
And I think that's one of the and I guess this is what you teach in part of your coaching business, is the ability to take a goal, which is something, you know, my son says to me, you know, Dad, you know, I see this Ferrari. That's my goal. Well, it's just so far out there. I mean, how are you going to achieve that?
Right.
And you've got to break it down. And one of the real skills, I think, that you're talking about is being able to look at a problem and break it down into bite-sized chunks, because, you know, otherwise you're never going to be able to take the first step. And is that what you find with your coaching with some of the people that you come in contact with?
Yes, particularly if I'm working with a younger person. You know, I'm thinking of this one young man in particular who's, you know, in his late 20s, and he was very frustrated with his perceived inability to move forward in several areas of his life. And so the first thing I worked with him on is just changing his mindset.
Yes.
Right. So, and you mentioned story earlier, and this was getting him to change the story he's telling himself about his own life. Right. Because when we reframe our stories, we're able to reclaim our life. We're able to reclaim ownership of our lives. And so that was the first thing I worked on with him. And then I'm like, okay, well, what I'm hearing is, right, so mirroring back, you're not feeling like you're really concentrating at work, so you're not able to dive in. So I devised a series of meditation exercises, of journaling exercises, of supplements that help quiet and focus the mind, according to the latest advances in neuroscience, and then set up accountability milestones that we would then check in and measure each week when we work together.
Yes.
And by the end of our time, he was off all pharmaceuticals. He was meditating every day. He said he felt better than he had in his whole life.
Yes.
He was totally calm and focused. His relationship with his fiance was better. He was being talked to by his boss about a promotion.
Yeah.
It was really stunning to have the honor to be a part of that journey with him.
But you're using there techniques that are hundreds of thousands of years old.
You know, absolutely.
I think even the earliest Greek philosophers talked about, you know, a man's, or, you know, a person's universe is basically in their head.
Yes.
You know, and it's there. And so, you know, talking about perception as well, because I think that's one of the key things that entrepreneurs or, you know, businessmen generally suffer from, is the perception of who they are and where they fit into their lives or the value chain. And people like Elon Musk, for example, I was watching his video the other day about how to cure transportation issues by, you know, what you do is you just build a limitless number of tunnels underground, which sounds crazy, but it's not, it's possible. And and there are other people that just would dismiss that instantly. And is your coaching, does that help people sort of open up their views of what they can achieve?
I hope it does. That's certainly my intention. And one of the things that I start with when I'm working with an entrepreneur is, if there were no limits, if everything was possible, what would your idea look like? What would it sound like? What would it feel like? And I have them really go through all the five senses and get really curious about how big their idea would be. And then we talk about how most limitations are self-imposed.
Yes.
And we talk about how to systematically remove them and how to further hone their idea and hone their own engine, right? Because we are only as strong as our mind and our body. And so a lot of the things that I teach and a lot of the tools I use personally are how to get really clear. And how to get really focused and how to be in your center and come from a place of possibility instead of lack of fear.
Okay. I have an admission to make.
No. Okay.
And depending on how this goes, it may or may not appear in the final version. But I used to be incredibly skeptical about all that sort of stuff. And I just thought, I'm just going to get on and do my thing and, you know, run my business and, you know, I know best. Yeah. And then, you know, as time passes and you meet more people and you speak to more people, you realize actually you're not alone, because that is an issue with a lot of entrepreneurs who have this single-minded focus, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
But do they take counsel from other people? Do they have mentors? Do they listen to other people? You know, I think they should.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that, and this is anecdotal, right? I've not done a study on this, nor read a study on this. I find that there are points in an entrepreneur's journey where they are more receptive than others. I find that they're typically quite receptive when they're younger or when they're just starting out.
Yeah.
And when they're older and or more seasoned and have had the stuffing kicked out of them a few times.
You're right.
It's in that middle bit where they've had, you know, one big win.
Yes.
And they're riding that wave and they're on top of the world and no one can tell them anything. So when I encounter someone in that phase, I'm be like water, right? I'm just... Okay. Well, that's wonderful. I wish you all the best and feel free to circle back if something shifts for you.
Yes. But that's why, that's the other thing. That's why failure is actually such a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Failure, not in the sense of being an abject disaster, but failure in the sense of the scientific definition.
Yeah.
Where you try something and the outcome is not what you were expecting. So you then try something else.
Yep.
And this concept of failure is something that seems to be putting a lot of people off and has done for years. And do you come across a lot of that as well? People thinking, I've tried this, it failed, so I've gone back to my day job.
Yes, I have. And I think that a lack of resiliency, which is what we're talking about, is one of the biggest problems, not only for entrepreneurs, but for people, period. Yes. You know, I'm in a new relationship and we had one fight. I'm out. Yeah, you know, I just did a startup and we're in the red this month. I'm out, you know, whatever it is. Have you read Brené Brown's Rising Strong?
No, but it's now on my list.
Yeah, she is. But you're familiar with her work. She's a social scientist.
I haven't come across it, but thank you. And
She's one of the world's leading researchers on vulnerability, courage, resiliency. So, you know, she's an academician. She's a social scientist. She's a researcher. She's absolutely brilliant. She is one of the, I think it's still in the top 10 for all TED Talks ever.
Fantastic.
On the power of vulnerability.
Yes.
Which is how she first came into my consciousness was that TED Talk. I had several people, including my father, send it to me. And he still claims credit because I really, I love her. I've read all of her books and I really use a lot of her findings in my life and in my coaching. And my father still takes credit for it. Well, so, I sent you that first video.
But vulnerability. So how is it? Is it something you use or is it something that, how does she describe it?
Well, so first let me touch on Rising Strong because it is the thing that we will all fall. It's how we get back up. It's how quickly we get back up and it's how we get back up.
Yeah.
And I even think that it should be required reading for business curriculum.
Yes.
You know, because I think you'll agree any startup founder needs to be as resilient as they come. So, and the book, it goes into case studies about resiliency, findings about resiliency, and some beautiful and very vulnerable personal stories that Brené shares about resiliency. And it's also about owning your story, which we, you know, of course, touched on earlier.
Yes.
You have to own your stories in order to envision a new and different ending. Right. So for instance, in the example of the entrepreneur who has a failure, and it's tempted to quit and get another day job or, you know, what have you, a way that I might work with them is to say, okay, well, is there a different way we could look at this story?
Yes.
And one of the phrases that I use all the time is, how would you silver lining this?
Yeah.
So, okay, you failed. So guess what? You're one step closer to a success.
Yep.
Right?
So and what's the spin? What's the spin?
What's exactly. The silver lining? What's the gift? What's the opportunity out of this failure? Because there is always one. And I find that the failure to recognize that or to look for it is one of the biggest inhibitors to resiliency.
What's the lesson? You know, everything has a lesson.
Everything.
What do you learn? Bounce back. Because you're right. I think resilience is one of the most critical elements of success.
Yes.
Just the ability to just pure dogged determination. Mm-hmm. Because there's a quote somewhere, I don't know who said it, but it's very difficult to stop someone who is never going to give up.
You know, I love that. Yes.
But also, I love, and again, one of your interviews I listened to, you talk about Mary Wells Lawrence.
Yes.
And her quote, "If you're not satisfied with your life, it's time to invent a new one."
Yes.
How possible is it? So maybe if you can go back to when you were working for somebody else.
Yeah.
Was there a moment there when you thought, I want to, you're not really reinventing yourself. You're kind of evolving. How possible is that?
It is eminently possible. I feel like I've done it numerous times just in my own life.
Yes.
Whether it's deciding to move across the country and without a job.
Because you're originally from Kentucky, is that right?
Yeah. Yes. And I moved from Kentucky to New York, back to Kentucky, out to California. So I've done this multiple times. That's been part of my own discovery process, my own sort of hero's journey, you know, to use Joseph Campbell's mythology. And each time, I just had an unshakable belief in myself. It wasn't that I had some magic cure or magic. I just knew that I would be fine no matter what.
Yes.
And I think that the other big thing is I was excited about the journey.
Yes.
I was excited about what might be around the next corner. So having that courage, having that curiosity and playing in possibility, I think is so important. And all of my reinventions have not been entrepreneurial. You know, one of them was, I want to go back to school.
Yes. You're right. And I think there's a difference between growth and evolution and sideways movement.
Yeah.
You know, so and it does take an enormous amount of courage to do the sort of things that we will do, whether it's moving geographically or stopping something because it doesn't feel right and embarking on something where you really don't know anything other than what the first step is.
Sure.
So I think that's one of the really useful lessons that we learn, which is as long as you know what the next step is, you're kind of okay. So, and do you find also that there's a crossover between your art and your business life, where your business life is now almost becoming an art? In other words, is entrepreneurship an art form?
Yes, absolutely. And whenever I get frustrated or feel like I'm nearing some danger zone for burnout, which, you know, happens, we're all human, we all go through phases, that's my cue internally to pull back and reset and re-envision and make it fun again and get that juice and that creativity back in the process. And I use a lot of the techniques from art and from, you know, creativity to do that. You know, whether it's going, okay, I need to stop. What feels really, I work very intuitively.
Yeah.
So like I'll drop in and be like, okay, what project feels intuitively just really exciting, really juicy to me right now?
Yeah.
And then what is it that feels exciting? And then I get curious about that. And then it's like I'm building a sonnet, you know, or I'm building the layers of a painting. And then by the time I'm done with this exercise, I'm so excited about the project. I have so much passion around it. And I have direction.
Yes.
Right? Because I've charted out the signpost and I can't wait to dive back in. And that's usually also when I see results.
Energy and direction. So it's focus and productivity.
Yes.
I mean, those are the two brothers, I think, of success, which is the ability to be focused, mission focused. So the book that's coming out, Reclaiming Joy, is that, how does that, A, when's it going to be available? And B, can you give us a snippet? or is that still under the radar?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to say that coming out is a very generous terms, term.
It's being published. Sorry.
No. It's not even, this is, this book is in, it's in the womb. It is being conceived. It's in, it's, I'm charting it out. I have the log line. I have the outline. I'm charting out the chapters. I'm roughing it out. It's in its infancy.
But that itself, the fact that you're creating this new book, there are tens of thousands of people out there who are struggling to write the first word. You know, and do you find the same challenge with every book that you write, that it's new, it doesn't just flow, that you have the same, oh my God, what am I going to write about?
Well, my previous two books were, you know, books of poetry.
Yes.
And so that's a very different process than writing, you know, a book of nonfiction or personal development. So I'm learning this as I go along. You know, I've done a lot of essay writing and article writing and blog writing. So I have that skill set. And of course, I wrote a lot in this vein, just getting my MFA.
Yes.
But I've never written a book length work. So this is, I'm on my own journey right now of discovery and figuring out what works best and how to do this and keeping myself motivated. And, you know, it's fun. I don't like to get stale. I like to set constant goalposts and challenges for myself. And I feel like a lot of the discovery is in the process.
Yes.
We learn by doing.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, so this book is, here's my sort of couple sentences that won't even be in the book that are from me, right?
Yes.
I'll share this with you. There have been a lot of books written on happiness, but not many about joy. Maybe because happy is so shiny, so pretty.
Yes.
The cheerleader on the front row who gets all the attention, while joy is deeper, subtle, more elusive, the Mona Lisa of emotions.
Yes.
Joy comes softly and stays. Happiness rushes in like a wind, fleeting, slamming the door behind her in her wake.
Yes.
Joy is not as sexy as happiness. If happiness is a temperamental thoroughbred, joy is a steadying, plodding oxen making its way unerringly back to the barn. So given the choice, everything, and I mean everything, is a choice, I choose joy. And then I go in with balance, gratitude, mindset, mindfulness, and go through all of these. So each chapter, and I give personal examples as well as data-based examples and case studies for each chapter.
That's fantastic. I can say, what did I say? A cold wind brushed across my temples as you were reading.
Thank you.
I mean, yes, but that itself, I mean, I can't remember who said this. It's a great quote, but the instructions are, if you want to write a book, just write two crappy pages a day. And I know that
yep.
So I think, did you find that, is that something that you're having to do as well? Not write crappy pages, obviously, but just force yourself each day to sort of incrementally move forwards.
I'm not doing that. I've done that in the past when I had deadlines for blogs or essays or even works of short fiction. I also write fiction.
Yes.
But with this book, I'm not taking that tact. And I'm saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying this is the tact I'm taking, is when I feel like I have an epiphany, yeah, either personally or I've witnessed one, or I've read something that deeply moved me and I've taken the time to sit with it and integrate it,
yes,
and translate it. That's when I've gotten so excited about sharing it,
yeah,
with readers, that I've gone back to the page and it's just, and I found the right slot for it, right?
Yeah.
And I plugged that learning in. And to me, that feels like a true way, an authentic way to write this book.
Yes.
And a joyful way.
Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, you've got to, one has to sort of, you know, believe in one's own PR, as it were.
Well, yeah.
But that's fabulous. But I can't begin to thank you, Kate, for, you know, for being on the show. It's been, you know, I'd love to continue forever, but how do people find out more about you? How do they get in contact with you? How do they find out about all these amazing things that you can do for them?
Well, they are welcome to visit my branding and premium domain site at buckleymedia.com, and several ways to reach me there. My coaching site is transitionandtransform.com, and then my site for poetry, writing, painting, and my poet laureate work is, my name is katebuckley.com, and I'm on the social platforms, you know, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, at katebuckley1. And I want to thank you, Matthew. This has been so fun, so generous of you to have me on, and it's been a pleasure.
The pleasure is mine, honestly, Kate. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Hooked on Startups. I'm Matthew Sullivan. See you next week.